Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. This is a special live broadcast. I'm going to introduce a whole bunch of people. We're at in Fort Myers, live at our mediumship
Afterlife Explorers and Mediumship Convention.
Thank you, Fran.
You're welcome.
So I know where I am. We have with us an esteemed group of certified mediums, plus the esteemed parapsychologist, Lloyd Auerbach, Professor Paranormal. Say hello, Lloyd.
Hello.
Lloyd. And we have Rebecca Lo Cicero, and we have, I'm going in order as I'm reading around the table, Doc Neil Zapowski, Janet Mayer, Angelina Diana, Joe Peretta, Joseph Scheel, Gina Simone, Laurel Lynn Jackson, Siri Bernson, Fran Ginsberg, and I'm Bob Ginsberg. And Renee Buck.
Hiding in the mirror.
I was blocking her.
I'm sorry, Renee. That was Renee Buck. And, you know, to the format of tonight's show, we're going to go straight through. We have a lot to talk about. We're not going to do any radio spots. The mediums, even though they're an illustrious group, we're not doing readings. This is not a format for that. If you do have a question, you can for our mediums, you can call and let us know. And I guess a good place to start is a question that we get all the time, and different mediums have way different perspectives on this. And the question is whether mediums are born that way, or whether mediumship is an art or an ability that can be learned. Anybody wanna address that before I summon you to the to answer it? I mean, anybody want to volunteer? I mean,
yeah, I'll volunteer.
Okay,
Neil. Yeah, I mean, I'm a skeptic almost as much as Siri, but not quite. Siri was born with the ability. I never had this. I happened to grow up in a town 8 miles from Lilydale, New York, which is a spiritualist center. And when I would go fishing as a kid with my father on Lilydale Lake, and I'd say, "What's that town over there?" He said, "Don't go there, they're all nuts." So, of course, I didn't check it out. So I went as a teenager, and I was raised Catholic, and I thought, well, you know, are they feeding us a line to keep us good little boys and girls? And when I got my first reading there, a medium brought through my Uncle Frank by description, by name, and I was quite impressed. I had never had psychic experience until then. Being a skeptic, I said, he's got a trick. I think it's a cool trick. I'll either learn it, or if I can really do this, it proves that there is something beyond the physical. So I studied mediumship, and it took me 2 years before I realized that there was no trick and that you could do this. So I was not born with these.
So you're living proof that
I learned it, and by golly, I stuck with it until I could figure it out. I wanted to learn the trick, and after 2 years, I realized it wasn't a trick. You could actually do this.
Right, but I sense that all of you at this table would probably agree that you had intuitive ability as a child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anybody not? No. So everybody had.
I was religious, but I didn't really feel like I was intuitive. I mean, I prayed.
Yeah. Rebecca, you going to say something?
Yeah, I fall into what I believe is a rare category. When I hear a lot of mediums tell their story, I don't remember a moment when I couldn't communicate. And the stories that my family tells are always connected to relatives that have crossed over to the point where we would gather for dinners and they'd say, "Rebecca, is there anyone around?" You know, and they'd watch me. They filmed me with those bright camera lights when I was younger, not to date myself, to see what I was doing and how I would do it. So I've never not known that I could, but I've also always believed everyone else could. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting perspective for me.
And maybe I can, because I associated in those 2 years of learning with people like Rebecca, maybe rubbed off.
Well, isn't it difficult as a child to have these intuitive abilities that certainly your friends were not having? How do you integrate that into your growing up? I mean, I would think that you thought there was something wrong with you. I mean, am I crazy? Why am I able to do this and other people are not? I mean, does that resonate with anybody, or was this just normal to you?
I certainly felt that way.
Which way?
You know, as a child, I had the ability. I drew the first spear drawing when I was like 5 years old. I had no idea what I was doing, and it was a big deal to everybody else, and I had no idea what was going on with it all. But I remember just knowing stuff about people and not liking it, so, you know, because I would know stuff about people coming into the house. So psychically, things were working. But as far as mediumship goes, I would start to know things that people were in the house and people were around me. But I always thought it was normal.
Right.
I didn't think it was strange until people told me it was strange.
Right.
And they started to say, "What's wrong with you?" And when they started to say what was wrong with me, then I reclused really heavily and I got very, very shy. I stayed shy up all the way through high school. Mm-hmm. So I really needed to kind of find a way to what this was all about. And like Neil, I was very proud of a very religious family. So I thought these were just religious experiences or something. The euphoria of being in church or something like that.
Yeah.
And later on that was turned around and I understood a little more about it. And then I found out once I became a medium and a certified medium that you know, both my grandmothers were mediums in Ireland, and nobody ever told me that.
Right.
So it was always like to keep that quiet to yourself, you know.
Right. Makes a big difference if your immediate family is supportive or fearful of what's going on. Yeah.
The thing about being born with it or developing it, I've known people that have developed it because they've had a near-death experience or because they've had a traumatic experience in their life, and then they've gone on to adopt this in their life, or they've gone through some real stressors in their life that brought them to look more into the spiritual side of their life and get away from the physicalities and that type of thing.
Right.
So they moved to that direction and became much stronger. So.
Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Or?
Well, for me, this is Laurelyn Jackson. You know, I want to address two things. I think that we all are born psychic and connected to one another on the other side. And I think what happens for most people is around age 5 to 7, when we start formal school in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, we kind of jump into our analytical brain and the chatter starts. And we kind of distance ourselves from our connections with one another, those cords of light I see between people here on the other side. So just to address that, I think we are all born psychic. My experience growing up is it never actually occurred to me that other people didn't experience the world the way I was experiencing it. You know, I would see people in colors. I would feel their emotions. I thought that's just how we all communicated. For me personally, it did initially, about age 11, start feeling like a real curse. Because what happened for me is I knew when my grandfather was going to die just before he died, and that made me feel really dark and haunted. But like you brought up, Bob, I think it's very important how we're taught to embrace those things. And I think quite often in our world, in our culture, we're given the message, close the door on that. That's frightening. Be afraid. You know, very fear-based thinking. I was very blessed, and I really feel that was part of the universe's plan to put me in a family with such an extraordinary, loving mother that when I confessed to her at age 11 that I had known my beloved grandfather was going to die, and I said, I think I'm psychic, and why do I have this, and I feel cursed. What's wrong with me? You know, she looked at me and she said, "Nothing's wrong with you, Laura. This is just another part, another gift that you have to understand and perceive our world." And then she confessed that, we're talking about running in families, that it had run on her side of the family for generations. And then I felt less alone, but like maybe I was part of a club I wasn't sure I wanted to be in. And to be honest, it took me 2 decades after that to really understand the incredible gift that this was and to understand that it was a tool gifted to all of us to help us help each other navigate our world. Because the thing is, I get very little for myself, but I can read so openly for other people. And I really think there's a message in that, too, about connection to one another. I also think people throughout, you know, the world, your neighbors, your friends, are probably delivering messages to you from the other side without even realizing it. The other side uses all of us as vehicles and messengers of light. And, you know, I think even a lot of our loved ones who are on the other side will speak through other people without them realizing in beautiful ways, giving messages of love. So I can understand the, you know, the fear that's there because I experienced it. It's my hope that, you know, through programs like this and through discussions like this, people will open more to their abilities because they're there. They might be hiding, but they're there.
Right. Well, we certainly find that in our works. You know, we have these afterlife discussion groups and people show up, especially when they're there for the first time, and they sit and they don't say anything the whole time, just taking everything in. And maybe they'll come to one or two meetings like that. And then the third meeting, all of a sudden, they start telling us stories, like, you know, knocking your socks off. And you say, why did you wait? You know, because they're fearful. They don't want to be judged. They're not often surrounded by people who are accepting of it or understand it, you know. And once you present that, that nurturing atmosphere, they open up the floodgates. So how many people keep these things hidden? You know, I've mentioned this, you know, before in the air, but I'll mention it again because it's so illustrative of what we're talking about. We have a family, you know, physician, and he's a friend of ours. And you know, a couple of years after my daughter's death, I don't remember what the ailment was, but I decided to go to him, and he said hello, and he says, what have you been doing? And I said, you really want to know? And he said, yeah. I said, well, I've been studying survival of consciousness. He looked at me, so, and we go on, you know, like talking, and then 10 minutes later, he says, can I ask you something? I said, what? He said, what's survival of consciousness? So I tell him. So then we go on talking for like another 20 minutes. He's interested. The people in the waiting room are rioting, you know, whatever. This nurse walks in and she hears what we're talking about. It turned out she had lost a child to crib death and she was very interested and she started talking more. Finally, she leaves. He closes the door. He says, Bob, can I tell you something? I said, yeah. He says, my father died 7 years ago. And I said, yeah. And he said, that day I had a lot of patients in the hospital. I had to call my answering service. And I called my answering service, and they read back a message, and they said, oh, you know, doctor, your father called. And he said, my father, you know, died at 9 o'clock this morning. And they said, oh, I'm so, so sorry, doctor. We must have misunderstood. He must have said, your father-in-law. I said, my father-in-law has been dead for 11 years.
Oh, wow.
So he says, what time did the call come in? It said, you know, 9:30. Read me back the message. The message was, Frank, it's me. You know, I'm okay. So here's a guy, he's a physician. He held this in for 7 years.
Wow.
He didn't tell his wife, he didn't tell his children, he didn't tell a colleague for fear of being, you know, judged and ridiculed. But isn't that a shame? Isn't it a shame to keep that hidden? And I guarantee you, I've never brought it up again, but I guarantee he's never told anybody since, you know.
No, that's interesting. I mean, I'm a family doctor, and I studied mediumship when I was in college. And when I went to medical school, I shared that I was studying mediumship and was going to Wednesday night circles. And as a doctor, I share it. Some of my patients think it's interesting. I don't give them readings during the visit. But, you know, so I think you project out what you want to get back. So I'm projecting out that it's part of me, and it's okay. And so I've really not gotten any negative feedback because
It's really bad in the academic world, to the point where people are afraid to even admit their interest in the subject, at least
which
publicly.
Only feeds the fear.
It feeds the fear, and part of that is the rise of the skeptics organizations, which have kind of infiltrated into the academic with calling anybody who even expresses an interest in this, you know, that they're woo-woo. So they make fun of people. And people have lost their jobs in universities because they have admitted their experiences. In the meantime, Dean Radin has said this, Ed May, and a number of other folks. This has happened to me a number of times. I meet people. I used to work at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, which is a Department of Energy facility. And they're a little more open because they have a couple consciousness researchers there. But when people found out I was interested in dealing with parapsychology, they would pull me aside and tell me a story. Of course, they all had stories, and sometimes these guys worked with each other. I mean, we have people in the same department, five people in the same department. They all had their own story, but they never talked to each other about it because they were afraid of what the others would think. And that's the typical situation, which makes it very difficult for us to explore these questions in science.
Yeah. And so we once interviewed a family physician in England. Actually, Ian Rubenstein was his name, and he was a medium. And the way that the social medicine works in England, it would be very dangerous for him to let on, you know, about his mediumship. And yet he did, and he started giving readings to his patients. And then his patients started, the word got around, they started making up ailments. and get free readings.
Oh, my gosh.
So I could do that. I'm going to ask a question that, I mean, there are, even for me, this may seem a little bit weird, this question, but I was reading a book. Actually, my good friend Richard, sitting back there, gave me this book, and it chronicles a researcher from the, you know, 1930s, respected, and he was researching, actually buried artifacts and buried crosses, and he was trying to find them based upon descriptions of discarnates. And he was working with a medium, and the medium, he put some sort of a device, a one-way wire receiver on her chest, and he would go with 100 feet of wire in a cup, so to make sure that the medium could not hear any of the conversation. And he would show these discarnates photographs, asking them, they wanted to help. They were deceased researchers, and they wanted to help them. And he would show them, and the photographs he was asking them to identify, and he would say, can you see these? And they said, yes, very clearly. And he said, how can you see these? And he said, I see them through your eyes. So my question is, have any of you ever had a sensation when you were sitting with someone doing a reading, that somehow the discarnate that you were in touch with could see their loved one through you? Angelina, have you ever had that sensation?
Yeah, see their loved one through you.
As if they were seeing through your eyes.
Yeah, I've had that experience. I even had an experience where there was a surgeon on the other side, and he was talking to his wife about the recent open-heart surgery she had had. And he was addressing her from, like, as if he was there 10 years ago. And you remember when I gave you this pink thing, and he was showing me how it fell right where the scar started. And she said, that's impossible. I didn't have this scar, but there's no way that you would have known that I had that necklace. You know, so it's a sense, for me, every medium is different, but the way I felt it is I actually felt my, if you can't believe that my shoulders can be any broader than they are now, but they got, my shoulders felt very broad. I was able to explain how he sat because I felt that way. And then and the other thing that was striking too, because this happened quite a few years ago, is when I was talking to her as me, her hair was red. When I saw her as the doctor, her hair turned blonde, and that's the color her hair was when he was alive. Her, you know, so it's like he was transposing how he saw her, and it wasn't like she was giving that off to me. So it was really a freaky experience, and what even made it more interesting is I couldn't even tell you what he said now, but he explained to me, because he was a heart doctor,
right,
how the other doctor did the surgery. You know, and, like, I am, like, not anywhere near, like, Neil. I am not a doctor, so I was, like, going, and you know how this ventricle goes out? I'm like, what is that? Where did that come from? You know, so it was really quite an experience, thanks to Spirit.
Anybody else relate to that?
Toshio. You know, this mediumship is a blending of the minds between them and us, and so if they're blending our minds, we can definitely take on all the senses. So we can definitely see through their eyes. I didn't really realize what exactly that was, but I have at home, I've got like about 35 pictures of people I drew with the person across from me. And I'm trying to draw their mom or their dad or their child that had passed. And I draw it, and it's not the mother, a father, a child. It was the last person that they saw before they died in every single one of those cases. So the phenomenon is, you know, I don't think it's a phenomenon anymore to me. It's like that might happen. I have others that I've drawn that were, you know, different people in the family. But the consistency for a while was like that when I drew a living person, somebody who was still alive.
I can speak on the spirit speaking through my eyes.
This is Rebecca,
This is Rebecca Ann. Yeah. When I remember very few, but one in particular that I remember, there was this one girl who had lost her sister. And as I was reading her, I think both my eyes and my mouth, in a sense, the words, "I miss you," came out. And I was looking at her, but it was more like I was looking, the spirit was definitely looking through my eyes and speaking to her sister. I tend to not say the words, "Spirit misses you," because I'm not sure I truly believe that missing us is part of that energy. But I could see as I was looking at her that it wasn't myself giving her the message. It was somebody looking through me. I also felt stuck. I move a lot. My feet were stuck. So I think that it's very possible for a spirit to connect with our five senses to give the message through without it being deemed a possession or deemed
I
mean, they are by no means taking over, but they are joining with my energy specifically where they need to go. And I do believe often spirit will look through me at their loved one. They may say something like Angelina was saying, you know, "I look at you, but you have different hair." So I will look and I'll go, "He's telling me you look different," and I can feel that they're looking at you differently. But it doesn't always happen that way. I think that's when spirit chooses to do that, or if I as the medium allow it. Sometimes I don't allow it, and I, you know, I'll say, "Okay, a little too close," you know. But I understand, and I remember this one particular sister's, one that was crossed, and saying to her, "I miss you." And kind of standing back going, "Wait a minute, she doesn't miss you," but that was her looking at each other. So it was the physical inside of me from spirit looking at the physical here and relaying the message. That's the best example I've ever come across.
Mm-hmm. This is Renee. Something that happens to me, and I've noticed increasingly frequently lately, is as I'm getting ready in the morning before a reading, especially when I'm choosing the colors that I'm wearing or my jewelry, I will feel the presence of the spirit who's going to come in help me choose what I'm going to be wearing. And the color is always significant, or the kind of stones. For example, the other day I was going for, I think I was wearing some sort of a blue or green top, and so I was going to pick out some green earrings, but my hand just went right over to the turquoise in this drawer of earrings. And I thought, okay, well, that's weird. It doesn't really match. But it was like my eyes were glued to the turquoise earrings. So I'm like, all right, I'll wear the turquoise earrings. And then it was like, open the drawer, get the turquoise bracelet, So the woman calls me, who's coming, and I go down, and I meet her downstairs to the gate, and she's wearing this huge turquoise medallion on her necklace. And I said, "Oh, you are wearing turquoise." I said, "See my turquoise? I was told I had to, I was sensing I had to wear turquoise." And she said, "Oh, that was my daughter's favorite. In fact, we even ordered a turquoise casket from Arizona for her."
Wow.
So her daughter was like already with me, already working, and we connected so quickly. It was a beautiful reading. Yeah, so.
I know that some of you, I know Janet, you get a lot of messages before a scheduled reading, right? We'll come to you, you know, whatever. Do any of you ever have spirit come to you after you've done a reading, like to give
you missed this?
Yeah. You know? It does happen a lot.
Yeah, they still hang around for a while.
Yeah. I think they're saying thank you.
Yeah.
I think I've made some good friends.
Me too. Right.
They don't say, schmuck, you didn't tell her this, and I told you to tell you this?
2 months later, they'll pop into a reading.
Really?
Because it's the same, unique, you know, situation, like the same job, same name, same thing, and they'll pop in and say, you have the same name as me.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a spontaneous reading. This is Janet Mayer. I had a reading, and a young man came to the side of the bed, and that's how it all started. And so I knew what was going on, and the person emailed me that day, and it just kind of played out in something I never did, and I just decided that child was for that person. And I gave him some information, and 2 years later, he came back to me, and he said his sister had a baby, and I had to find this lady's email. It took me forever to find it, and I emailed her and said, you know, I hate to do this, but I just have to ask you, I feel like your son came through, and he was mentioning congratulations to the baby, and her daughter had just had a baby the night before. And so I'm like, that can happen. It's just, you don't know. It's like you said, you make friends with them, and they know, and they trust you, and they'll come back. And it was really cool. And it was just one of those spontaneous things that happened that, you know, you just can't plan.
I've obviously never gotten any wardrobe advice, though.
Well, you should talk to Renee's fashion designers on the other side.
She needs her voice.
I'm sure people ask you this all the time, you know, as mediums, but they want to know, how do you turn it off? You know, how do you not, you know, communicate, you know, when you're off duty, so to speak? I mean, is there a mental switch that you can activate to say, I'm not open, like the door is shut, don't come, because otherwise your lives can be pretty tumultuous if people's spirit are always trying to get messages across. So what do you do?
Gina Simone. I was going to wait for someone else to speak because for me it's the flip. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of psychic medium friends and they are always talking about how they get information all the time, and I would get very frustrated because I'd say, wait a minute, how come I'm not at Stop and Shop, and I'm not reading the cashier's loved ones that are crossing
over. Amen.
How come? And I would get very frustrated from that. And after sitting down and really meditating and grounding myself, the message I kept hearing from Spirit is, that's not what your gift is about. We will step up, because I also had in the very beginning, because I came from one of those backgrounds where I was not supported. This was not something that the family understood. They, as a matter of fact, did not want me bringing this up. We got to the point that we're calling the priest, and she's possessed. So that's when I stopped. I stopped, you know, letting them know that I was communicating. But what ended up happening was, now I have this trust factor. Is Spirit showing up for me? So because I needed to learn that, they're saying, well, we're not going to show up for you when you're going food shopping, because that's not what this is about. You're going to sit down with someone who is looking to get a reading and to connect with their loved ones, and that's when we show up. So it's very frustrating on the flip side not to have that constant communication. I would love to have that. I'm thinking I would want that. But in actuality, it is about when I am centered and grounded and ready to receive a client and start speaking to Spirit, that's when they show up.
Right. How about you, Joe?
I would have to agree. I don't get it that way either. I'm not getting messages all the time. But I have to say, I think it's very personal, and I think it depends on what part of your life you're in or what part of your development as a medium you're in. Because when I first started, I was a little bit of a skeptic myself, not in the process, but just that I could do it. So I wasn't going to Spirit. Spirit had to come to me, because if they didn't, I wasn't reading anybody. Mm-hmm. It was like they had to hit me over the head in order to get me to talk. Okay. So for the first year, it was like, I'm surprised I didn't get fired from the job that I had, because all I did was read people all day long instead of doing my job. But then after I got control of it, then, you know, if you know me, it's very much my personality. Like, if it's not time to talk, it's not time to talk. So that's just like, there's no imaginary switch I have. It's just like Spirit knows, leave him alone, it's not the time.
Right.
But I'm sure you would do this too, if they do get my attention on the rare case that I'm not supposed to be reading someone and they do, I always honor that, because I feel like to get through my wall, whatever you want to call it, that I put up, you got to be pretty important or, you know, loud to pass that.
Mm-hmm. Siri, you've been uncharacteristically quiet, so do you have a switch that you turn on and off?
I do, actually. On my battery just died. I was videotaping this live, and I had a lot of audiences, and people were saying hi to everyone. So I actually do have a switch, and the way I do it is, you know, I get my head into this bubble, and it feels like water, and that is just a little bit before the session starts, and I get a few keys of information, and then I begin to merge it all together, and then when I'm done with the session, I actually turn the switch off. So I turn it off and on before and after a session, but I always leave it open just a little bit, so that I know what is going on in my own life. And like a few things that I kind of like, before coming here today, somebody was going to ask me about military time, and I knew the question was going to come, and I actually said it to them. There was another thing that happened that was with Laura Lynn, actually. So I have a little bit of an opening, but for the rest of it, off, on.
Mm-hmm. Or you have...
You know, for me, I'm amazed listening to people saying that they would want it more. For me, it's like I'm exhausted from doing this work. I have to tell you, like, what I have learned from, you know, shutting it off and turning it on is I can get really sick if I don't slam it shut. And so, honestly, I keep that vault door shut tight on the mediumship unless I have a scheduled reading. But at the same time, I put my spirit guides in charge as my bouncers on the other side. And like Joe, you were saying, every now and then somebody will come through.
Right.
I call them VIPs,
right?
Because I know, like, my you know, intention is always like, if it's meant to, if I'm meant to deliver a message and it's really important, you can let them in. And it happens sometimes. And I always honor it. But for the most part, when I do a reading, I feel exhausted afterwards. It's like running a 5K, which I know what that feels like because I ran one once. And the whole reason I ran it was so that I could understand, like, oh, that's what a reading feels like after. You know, if you compared it to, like, a cell phone, if I do a mediumship reading for, let's say, an hour and a half, I'm on 2% at the end. However, psychic is different for me. Psychic always comes to my left, mediumship to the right, and I can never shut off my psychic abilities. And quite frankly, I love it. It helps me navigate the world. Mm-hmm. When I meet people, I'm seeing them in colors. I'm experiencing them like as energy, not just seeing them in 3D. And it's truly helpful and wonderful. It kind of layers my whole experience of, you know, being human here and of existence. But I think that for me, particularly, and I'd be really interested in hearing from all the other mediums here, for me, it's exhausting, and I have to honor it by slamming that door shut tight when I'm not doing a scheduled reading. How is it for everybody else?
I agree with you, Laura Lynn.
I
agree with you, Laura Lynn. For me, I grew up in a family of five kids, and I was the oldest out of five, and I grew up with a hearing problem. And I remember specifically in grammar school putting my head down for the nap we used to take, and the teacher said, I was going to call that 5 minutes from now. Why are you doing that now? I said, I thought you called it. So it's like I could sense it, and I'm like, are we taking our cookie break and nap now? And I'm like in kindergarten, you know? And as I used to be a newscaster in radio and then decided to go into this work, I found myself in a dilemma because when you do news, you have to be credible, you have to be in your mind. But then the psychics that we were doing for the show, for the morning show, would say, you're sensitive. What are you thinking about right now? I go, I was daydreaming. And they said, well, that's how you could be more intuitive. So for me, turning it on and off, and what was that wonderful scientist you worked with, Janet? He did some experiments with you? Fudge language?
Yes.
I forget his name, a doctor.
Jeff Terry, he had done some
experiments with us. And what we found was, when I was in, and you were there too, Laura Lynn, when we were in this daydream state, we seemed to get more information. So putting it together as a layperson, but a medium, for me, churning it off means I'm in my mind. And I'm actually concentrating what people are saying. Whereas a kid, when I had a hearing problem, I would daydream and I would be getting information about them because I couldn't hear them. So for me, to be less tired... Like, I admire you, Janet, for being able to, like, you know, get readings before people even come to their house. I would be exhausted. So for me, turning it off means I'm in my mind, I'm paying my bills, I'm talking to people and listening. When I'm in the zone to read, that turns off and I'm in a daydream state. And the more I am disciplined to be in the world as taking care of my bills and doing what I need to do, I feel stronger when I read because then I'm in that other daydream state and my mind is going somewhere else. So that's how I make a conscious decision. Do I have to go pay my bills okay, be in my mind. Don't even decide if the banker likes you or not energetically, because I don't want to waste that energy right now.
It's interesting.
It's kind of how,
you know, as we sit here and we listen to it, you know, you're making a conscious effort to be in your mind. For those of us that are non-mediums, we're trying to get out of our minds.
Right. So daydream.
Some of us already are.
We are.
Daydream.
You know, and it's hard for people, you know, listening, because, you know, you're trying to find ways to restrict the information coming
right.
in, and we're trying to find ways. We wish we were always open, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we wish we could have more direct contact and direct experience. But
the best sense of it is we're definitely in the right brain when we're doing this work. We're
right.
in the creative side of the mind.
Yeah.
So when you do practical things on the practical side, it shuts off, or it's going to dissipate quite a bit.
I don't even think of that. I just go into that daydream state.
Right. one theory is that you know, our brains are these reducing valves, you know, to filter all of this non-physical information that's coming in, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to navigate the physical world, you know. And in a sense, you know, that's what you're going through, you know, as well. So.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment about the on and off switch.
Yeah.
I don't have one. I guess the
you
best
certainly
thing
don't.
I was just gonna say.
We love you. But
no, I think that because I've always felt this, it's almost like it's ringing a phone. So
right.
I don't turn my soul on or off, or my energy on or off, or my attention on or off, or my brain on or off. I know that my soul is always on, always active, and always connected. And if I was to answer every single phone call, I would be sick, Laurelyn, like that. Like, I know that I can't do that. So I maybe answer 3 or 4 calls a day if they have an appointment. or maybe the phone will ring when I'm in a place, you know. And I do feel like they connect to me.
Yes.
And then they'll disconnect. And sometimes they're there, not connected, going, can I call? And I'm going, Cheerios right now, dude. I got to feed the cat and, you know, go take the dog out or something. But they're still there. So I'm always aware of it. But if there was a need, like a VIP, that's awesome. I would definitely, you know, pay attention to that. But there's, it's not an on and off for me in particular. It's more of a my choice, like you know.
Same thing for me.
When you're dead, like, don't come bother me unless you got a purpose. You know, you're not gonna ring somebody's, go up to somebody's door on Halloween for candy if the light's off.
Well,
and that's kind of how I feel about it.
But I have to agree with Laura Lynn. I have sort of that VIP thing. There's some. I have a lot of people that come to me regularly, sort of once, maybe twice a year. And I have the same thing. Those are the VIPs. Suddenly I'll get a really strong sensation of something. I didn't know who it is, but it's coming through. And then I will contact the person via email and say X, Y, and Z, and they will respond to me. And there was always a response of deep and just a deep and profound gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the VIPs. Those are the ones that I said, okay, I remember you. And then I send a little bit of email. It can be so healing.
Well, I mean, not to be offensive, I think everyone's a VIP on the other side. I think maybe it's the intention of spirit. You know, for those that aren't mediums, I don't want, like, someone at home going, well, my loved one's not important. They're not a VIP.
It's not about importance.
Yes. No, but I'm just saying.
They got through that
right.
Well,
what I was talking about is my guides, my spirit guides. Right. There seems to be a VIP line with velvet, like, whatever, you know, markers, and they'll just let certain people through because
right.
It's meant to be.
Right. Like, I think it depends on what the purpose of them coming through.
Right,
right.
The intention. Exactly.
It's,
the intention.
But, you know,
the intention is
right.
a little stronger.
Right.
Yeah.
The purpose.
Because for some reason, maybe they see their loved one there and they know there's going to be connective thing. I don't think that's any different than somebody grieving. And, like, I remember driving down. I was lost in New York. I'm like, Mom, help me. Joyce, help me. And a car with the Joyce name came across and showed me where to go. My mother made me important. She cut through that line.
Yes, that's
right. And
everybody we reach
right.
VIP is right.
Exactly.
That's the goofy term I came up with to explain,
right.
like,
when
they put
like.
That's what it feels
that's
like. Yeah. It's like
yeah.
that extra
right.
oomph of
like
energy.
Like, you know that they talk to your guides and, like, you said the right thing at the door. Like, okay, time to get it in. Like,
yeah. And there's a higher reason why they need to
yes.
prepare
right.
at that time with
an intention.
Exactly.
And I honor that.
Especially
an intention.
When
they wouldn't do that to me otherwise, because I get, like, I'm very careful about opening.
I'm like, why are you bothering me right now? Like,
I can give one example.
Very intentional
phantom. So I'm in Iceland, I'm back home, and I'm minding my own business. I was really, really jet-lagged, and I had this really strong urge to contact one of my regular clients. And initially I thought I'm not going to do it, but I was in that really, really tired sleep state. And out of the, sort of out of, without thinking about it, I got my laptop and I emailed her quickly. And then when I woke up a few hours later and I got the response from her, and there was a woman in Connecticut, and she said, you would never believe how evidential this was and how helpful this was, because her spouse was passing away. And
that is VIP. They push through when you're off duty
right.
for a reason. That's exactly the same thing I'm saying.
They ask for an ID at all.
But I'm in a different country.
What'd you say, Bobby?
They ask for ID at the.
But here's the question I always ask, because I always want to figure out how things work. If you have a strong connection to a client, how do you know you're not picking it up psychically that they know that their spouse is dying? No, I'm just saying.
I know, but if
I'm
in a different country and I have not spoken to this client in 6 months and I'm in a totally different continent,
right.
I begin to think about this person. Then
sure.
You really think, well, there is higher consciousness and you cannot deny it.
Right, so my question is, from my viewpoint, this is what I ask, is how do I know that that person doesn't feel so strongly connected to me? Because if I've read them and I've helped them feel spirit connection and they have someone close to them dying, they're going to go, gee, I wonder if I can see Angelina. It's my question. I know you know what you're getting. But for me as a medium, I'm like, how do I know they didn't send me that thought? Because they really want a reading from me. Like, I want to learn that from my viewpoint, from a medium's viewpoint. Because for me,
door all the time. My door is closed.
Mine is too.
Through the door, it's going to get my attention.
Right. Yes.
Mine just feels different.
Yeah.
It feels different to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's
different.
Yeah, everyone's
different.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the fundamental question, actually, that we get in parapsychology,
right.
whether it's the psi of the living only or if it's somebody else involved.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why, for me, just for my practice, because every medium's different, and Siri obviously has confirmation. She's getting it from spirit. But for me, that's why I have this no rule policy. Like, I don't read unless someone's in front of me. That's just for me. I wish I could have.
You don't have VIP push throughs?
No. No.
Wow.
The only time,
not envious.
The only time I got it was through family. I had my sister's new boyfriend's dad. He passed away. I didn't even know him. And I was taking a bath, and I'm hearing Ernie. I'm Ernie.
Okay, you definitely had a VIP push through.
Right, but it's with my sister.
So I did a lot when I was showering, and it never occurs to me that I'm naked and talking to them.
But it's my sister, though, so it felt more personal. And I go there, and I look at, she goes, please come to the wake. I'm like, okay, I don't even know this guy. And I look, and it says, please write your wishes for Ernest. I'm like, oh, great. And he told me in the bathroom, he said, tell my son it's okay, you gave away the fishing gear. I'm like, okay. So I'm standing there, and my sister goes, my sister's a medium. I go, great. You know, like, that's the last thing I wanted to do. And then he goes, do you have a message for my dad? And from my dad, I said, well, I wouldn't tell him about the bathroom.
You're like, tell me this when I was naked.
No.
You were naked.
Right. All I said was, he's happy you gave away the fishing gear. And he said, oh, I just did that this morning to his best friend.
It's so beautiful. Isn't
but
that
to
beautiful?
Me,
you experienced
me,
that too. It's
right.
A gift to be
but
part
to
of
me,
that.
It was my sister, and so I felt like I was helping my sister, so it didn't feel like I was doing something for a client. So that's probably
right.
the
that's
only
probably
thing.
Why.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Way.
Well, I get VIP push-throughs, too, when I'm in the shower. It's usually
you
Fran,
do.
And I welcome her. Hopefully not clothes.
Even I.
So let's shift gears a minute on that note.
I wish I
could
do that.
We hear about you in your naked episodes, Bob. We know. It's a different show, Rebecca.
This is a family show. We know, obviously, that there are both positive and negative forces in the universe. And yet, after
witnessing, you know, hundreds of readings, you know, with mediums, I don't recall any reading where a negative emotion or energy is coming through. So, I mean, certainly there are SOBs in this world, and when they pass over, at least initially, they're still SOBs on the other side. Why is it that you guys never bring through bad people?
We do.
We
bring through people who perhaps didn't make the best choices here.
Right.
But as far as negative demonic energy, is that what you're asking about?
Or are you just talking about jerks?
Not demonic, but
a lot of those.
But, you know, dark energy, you know.
Well, you can pick it up, though.
I don't love you instead of I love you.
Absolutely.
Or you were mean to me when I, you know, that kind of stuff.
I've gotten where they have been in prison, and I instantly have a feeling of, whoa, there was something really bad that happened. And
right.
Or I could say, I would even tell them, you know, I don't want to sound really bad when I say this, but I don't think I would have liked this person if I met him here.
Right.
Because they were not a good person, and they'd be like, yeah, you're right. And I'd say, well, but, you know, they're letting me know that they're working on this issue.
Right.
And they might come in that way.
Right.
So they're not going to come in and say, oh, I'm a jerk, and I'm still a jerk, I'm going to always be a jerk. Instead, they're like, yes, I was a jerk, I'm acknowledging that, I'm trying to, you know, change something. Not completely make it up and be completely better, but they're working on that at this time. That's
right.
What I might get.
Yep.
Right. It's almost like the spirit comes through as if they're depicting a character that they played in this lifetime. And in the process of reviewing their character flaws, they're acknowledging, I wasn't the best husband or I wasn't the best son, and these were the things that I said and did, but I'm now on the other side and I see things from a higher perspective, and there's a tremendous amount of clarity on the other side as to the poor choices that I made. As a medium, we're picking up that, I don't want to call it negative, but we're picking up that heavier energy. Because the spirit really wants us to know so that we're relaying it to the client.
Right.
This was not a nice individual. However, he steps up with an apology, or he steps up from the sense of, I'm learning from my mistakes. We're never in a place of, wow, like, I don't even want to speak to the spirit. Because, again, it's through the process of explaining how they lived in life and how they're learning, now the client is receiving all this benefit of, I can't believe that my loved one is actually learning on the other side.
That's very evidential. Bringing through their true personality.
That's true.
Is
right.
The name tag.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
So if we know it completely, if we know what they did, if we know detail about their life and what they loved and what they didn't love and how they were to people, then we go on from there to understand where are they now, what are they doing now, what's going on now. That's even more evidence.
Right. Well, survival, what is survival? It's survival of personality.
Right.
You know, so what could be more? So that's why the argument that gets a lot of people say, well, what you're doing is you're just picking out information from this information field or Akashic Records, whatever you want to call it, and it's conceivable that you have access to this, as outlandish a concept as it is. But how do you extract personality from this information field? You know, that seems to be the most evidential thing. You know, it's because it's a fact is a fact. But, you know, if Uncle Harry comes in, and Uncle Harry, you knew him, and you knew every aspect of him, and the medium starts taking on the mannerisms of him and everything else, that's evidence. Yeah.
You know, I just want to share this. I had a reading with a woman, and from the second that she sat down, I felt the energy of a male, and all of a sudden I started talking like this.
Yeah.
And I thought, why is my mouth leaning this way? And I said to her, this is very awkward. I'm sorry. And I'm thinking, do I have a tick or what? And I said, I'm very sorry. And it was kind of making me stumble because I didn't understand why. And then all of a sudden I said, does this mean anything? And she said, that's how my father spoke.
Yeah.
He had a stroke, and he always spoke out of his mouth.
Yeah. We were impressed early on. We had one of our Night of Mediums events, and one of our certified mediums actually was Lynn LeClaire, you know, that was sitting at a table. And we were kind of walking around, and I was overhearing a little bit, and all of a sudden she's talking, giving a reading to this woman at a table, and all of a sudden she starts to sign, you know, to this woman. And Lynn doesn't know sign language, you know, but she's signing, and then after the reading is over, you know, the woman said, well, you know, when did you learn how to sign? And she said, what are you talking about? I said, I don't know how to sign. I said, yeah, you were communicating with me. My daughter, my deceased daughter, was deaf.
So wow.
She was actually signing.
Wow. And she wasn't even aware of it.
She wasn't aware of what she was doing. You
that's
know?
So cool.
You know,
wow.
So that's
really cool.
I'm thinking, wow, this
yeah.
mediumship is cool.
It really is. It really is.
You know, I mean, how evidential is that?
Right.
You know? Well, I also heard a lot of mediums have said that, well, before a reading, I'll ask my spirit guide to surround me with light, sort of like as a bubble, so you don't have any dark.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I
wouldn't
do that.
Absolutely.
Mediums, you don't do that.
Nope.
No. I don't think there's dark on the other side, so.
You know, I think the readings, every single reading I do, I truly believe this. It's really arranged by the other side. Mm-hmm. So it takes place exactly when it is meant to, and it's really... The only time and way it will ever be arranged is if it's in the currency of the other side, which is love and forgiveness. That's the only currency there. So there's no reading that I'm going to do that will ever take place that is not in that energy flow. So I think that's why nothing negative or scary or dark comes
yeah.
through.
Well, I asked that once, you know, many, many years ago, probably before I even believed that you guys were for real. We were at a retreat, Fran and I, and I had, you know, witnessed a whole bunch of readings, and everything was loving and beautiful messages and evidence and all that. And one of the mediums, I won't mention, you know, his name, he got up and I thought it was like a comedy show. He's like, oh, I have your uncle here, you know. What a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
This guy was, you were there, right? Yeah, what a, you know, and he went on to say every negative thing you could possibly say.
He was, yeah, not connecting to
every, you know, and I'm like, whoa. But he was the only medium in all these years that has ever done that.
That sounds like it came through the lens of his own judgment.
That says a lot about who he is.
That's the problem with mediumship work. You're never judgmental. You step out of it.
On the other hand, I've heard mediums say close to what you said, and that's, and the response from the readee was, absolutely.
He was very belligerent, though, on every spirit, every spirit that came through.
He was in a bad mood that day.
It wasn't a good day,
And I've seen the reverse as well, where one time I brought through somebody's father at the very end. I gave the reading at the end. The father came through kind of hesitantly because he was a really bad person, and he came through with an apology that he was learning. And the person I was reading for said, I don't want to hear from him. Don't even tell me anymore. That was it. So the actual physical, the healing wasn't ready to be there. Maybe the father was planting seeds from the other side. But that happens occasionally.
Right. Yeah. We don't have much time left. But I was talking with Lloyd earlier when we were saying, one of the questions that we ask for the prospective mediums when filling an application is, you know, what is more important, evidence or messages of love? And I would throw that question out. If anybody gets it wrong, I'm going to decertify you. Okay.
That would be evidence.
I like it when they give evidence of love.
Right. Well,
that's what I was going to say. That would be my answer.
Evidence of love.
All right,
before,
you're two on retention.
I mean, the answer that we would hope to get is, first, you have to have the evidence.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then come the messages.
Right.
There are the people that give us back, and they say, "Oh, the evidence is not important. It's the messages of love." It's this epidemic of mediumship that we talk about. That there's just too many people in it for the wrong reasons. They can't do what they say, and they just see if I could sit before you and you're bereaved, and I tell you your deceased loved one, you know, it loves you and you were a great person and the whole bit. I did my job, whatever. I want to kill them when they say that, you know. So first you got to come through with the evidence, then the messages. But without it, one doesn't go without the other.
Right.
I think that it was a enlightening show. I thank everybody.
Yeah.
And if everybody is, anybody out there is in the near Fort Myers, Florida, come on by. The convention actually starts Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. Even if you're not near Fort Myers, Florida, get on a plane and get to Fort Myers, Florida, because we have a lot of wonderful mediums here waiting to meet you.
Or you could teletransport.
And with that, we'd like to say that your loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.